You're listening to Around Comics, episode 243, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix.
Alcohol on my hands, I got plans to ditch myself and get outside. Dancing women throwing plates, decapitating their laughing gates, swirling chickens, cotton flag, out of focus, much too bright, coming down, shining teeth. Game show suckers trying to bleed, but I got a drug and I got the bug and I got something better than love. How you like me now?
Pretty good.
Going on, feeling strong.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, drop on by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let's get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, back from Las Vegas, Nevada, and walking the earth is Mr. Brian Salazar.
Walking the earth. Hello.
Good to see you back, sir.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Again.
Like Kane in Kung Fu.
Walk to earth.
We see each other every day. And we have a couple fellow podcasters here. One from Detroit, Michigan. He's here because we're doing a little podcast. The podcast companion from, or the, yeah, that's
it. Can we change it to pod blast?
Pod blasting.
Yeah. Yes,
the comic book podcast companion cooler. From Tomorrow's Publishing. We're doing a little post-release party here at Dark Tower tonight. And Mr. Chris Marshall has joined us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you, sir. It's the voice of Collected Comics Library, so one of my favorite comic book podcasts, if you want to know about all things collected, and my favorite podcast about gay people that read comics.
It's a little...
Wow.
You fucking bigot.
You're more than that.
God.
Mr. Stevie D from CBQ.
I'll never leave now.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm good.
It's good to see you.
I'm doing all right.
Not like I don't see you just about every Wednesday.
I know.
It's like, yeah, welcome back. I just saw you 2 days ago. So, but yeah, so some fellow podcasters here joining
Pod
the
Blasters.
The Pod Blasters. Okay, Pod Blasters. From now on, it's Pod Blasters.
It's a much cooler name.
I like that.
It is.
Podcaster.
Pod Blasters. Pod Blasters.
There you go.
So it kind of sounds like I had a little too much caffeine, went to the bathroom. Oh, I just had a podcast.
There is a little of that in there. That's okay.
Well, before we jump in and start talking about comic books here, and we're going to be focusing on Blackest Night to kick off. But I want to remind you that this episode of Around Comics, as always, is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. Right now they are feed flesh. Right now they are sponsoring our book club selection, which is the Justice League International Volume 1.
Christ,
it is available. It's good stuff. And it is available at InStock Trades for a phenomenal 47% off the cover price. It can be yours for the low price of $9.54. So thank you for InStock Trades for that. And that's going to be coming out here next time we get together to record. So I'd say 3 weeks or so. So look forward to that.
Are you reading the trade or the hardcover?
You know, it's funny. I was at the
single issues. Sir?
You have the single issues.
I do have the single issues.
Nice.
I won't be reading them because I'd have to
dig them.
Find
up.
Them.
Wait, what are you guys talking about?
Justice League International.
The Blahaha. It's funny. I was at the DCBS sale, their 10th anniversary. That's the sister company for InStock Trades. And Ron Richards calls me after I tweeted that I was there. And Ron calls me. He's like, man, if they have the JLI hardcover volume 1, find that for me, because you couldn't find it anywhere. I think it's out of print now. Mm-hmm. And they had one copy on the shelves. So I got it for him for, like, I don't know, like $14 or something.
Nice.
So he is indebted to me now, because I have his JLI.
He's just going
to
turn around and sell it on eBay.
I know he is. I know he is.
What's it going for on eBay? I got it.
I didn't
touch on that book, but
Did a big eBay market watch on
a
CCL.
A market watch that I'm going to add to my show. I'm going to pick out one, you know, follow a couple books and how they sell each week and everything. So, but JLI, probably above market price, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Once those things go out of print, they yeah. shoot up. So, you know, it's keep an eye on your collections.
Speaking
at home.
Of Green Lantern, the Rebirth hardcover is
I got that.
Good money right
What's
now.
That going for?
I had to track that thing
$46,
down.
Something like that.
Wow. I paid yeah. more than cover for it. Not much. I was able to find a copy on eBay for like 20... Because it's like what, $20? I think
it's probably about $20, $25, yeah.
And I think I paid like $26 for it or something, so yeah. I was able to find it.
The Absolute's coming out next year, though.
Son of a bitch!
Yes, it is.
They got you. They got you.
I got yeah. all the hardcovers.
Absolute Rebirth. It'll probably have. Well, they're calling it Rebirth. It's probably going to have the first 12 issues.
Eh, fuck that.
Which, well, there were only 12 issues. There was a 12 issue limited series.
Oh, was Rebirth 12 issues? I thought it was 6.
Oh, I'm.
Rebirth.
It's six. I'm sorry. It's 6 issues. So
it's probably Rebirth and First Flight.
That's what they're probably going to yeah. do. Right?
Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. That, yeah. that makes sense because they wouldn't do an absolute of 6 issues.
No.
Well, they might.
Unless no, it, probably not. Not was, for 75
I wouldn't put anything. Well, if it's going to be 75 bucks, yeah, it better be more than 12 issues.
Okay. No, that's.
It better
that's,
be the first fucking.
No, that's
issues?
That,
yeah. well, for $75.
You know, Watchmen was $75.
It could include the first few issues of Green Lantern Corps when they rebooted that series too.
That would actually be kind of cool. Is do Recharge and Rebirth in the same?
Maybe that's what
that would be
do.
Cool. That would be very cool.
I don't care.
Steve
is just fine.
You guys are fucking nerds, man. I'm like, shit. And all this right. Green Lantern talk. Fuck oh, him. He wears a ring. Who cares?
Well, I tell you what. Speaking of our favorite police or space cop from Sector 2814. Blackest Night.
I fucking know that.
Sector
2814. I've been reading Green Lantern for 20 years. I couldn't have pulled
you didn't
that
know. Okay, wait. I've got a question.
I know it now that you say it, but I couldn't have.
Off the bat, I've got a question.
Yes.
Okay. There are now 2 Green Lanterns for each sector.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh,
Hal,
are there? Okay.
Hal is teamed up with John.
Yes.
No.
What sector?
Yes. 2814.
No, the hell's with
okay.
Kyle?
No.
Kyle is teamed up with.
With Guy.
Guy what sector?
Oh, Guy, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
that's Sector Zero because they're a part of the. Yeah, they're what do they call them? The Color Guard,
the is Alpha Lanterns,
Honor Guard.
No, they
don't have an actual sector.
Yeah,
they don't.
No,
okay,
no, they're just based
they're honor.
On
they're like yeah, they're
honor a lot.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the Alpha Lanterns kind of have taken over like the Manhunter roles.
Those guys are dicks.
Well, they're internal affairs for the space.
Yeah,
cops.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kyle and Guy are Honor Guard. So
yeah,
so they hang around OWA.
Yeah, they do special like Black Ops stuff.
they do like you know
the
presentations and you know if there's a ceremony they're there to hold flags and
they
stuff.
The
like
that's
what
Guy, that's how Guy feels about it. He's screw this. But yeah, I think they're kind of free to go kind of wherever
Rome.
They want, roam and go on special
walk
guardian and walk the earth like Kane. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Okay, so what are we talking about?
We're going to talk a little bit on Blackest Night, which has been my only, and I don't want to start off on a negative note, but finally, it's here. It's been building up for, what, 8 months now?
Years.
It's real. Well,
seems like.
Since Alan Moore wrote about it in 1986.
Yeah. Whoa! But no, since the conclusion of the Sinestro Corps War, it kind of led right into the buildup of Blackest Night. So
it's been too long. I've got a little sick of it.
The last 2 months, it's like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Just give me some
now.
Good Green Lantern stories. I don't need all the fucking backstories on every miscellaneous character.
Even though the tales of have been kind of good, and it's been, you know, but Sinestro Corps War, it kind of had a slow buildup. I think we're
but it was much shorter than what this has been.
I have a feeling that it was timing. You know, matter.
Well, I think actually, I was listening to the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say the Crankcast because it was Mike, but it was the last episode of Around Comics, and Mike had brought up a good point about
and
how
Mike's sitting.
Yeah,
right
I'm
there.
Pointing to him, and he's sitting right here. But he had brought up a good point about how when he was reading the Sinestro Corps War and everybody was talking about it, he was getting pissed off because he didn't want it to turn into an event like, you know. The Dark Reign.
Like, hush, don't talk about how good it is.
And I was like, right. You know, that makes it, that's completely what happened, too, because it's like you had Sinestro Corps, which had a little bit of that, but it was still sort of like the
content.
Under. Because we had talked about before the Sinestro Corps War, what was the Green Lantern story that was going on at that
Well, that was
point.
All was Rebirth and then.
No,
and then
after that.
One day, or
oh,
one
the Red
year
Lantern?
Later.
Yeah, well, the whole Red Lantern thing. Maybe it was the Sinestro Corps War we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Because then
it was a fantastic event, but it wasn't an event.
Yeah. Right.
It was
right. And, it came out of left field.
Yeah.
Right.
And but now this is really, you know, we've had, it seems like 8 months worth of fucking build up to this, and it's getting a little tiring.
It's a fairly, I don't want to say it's a mega event because it is fairly contained. It's Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern, the Blackest Night miniseries, and then you have some limited three-issue series. You got Tales of the Corps. You got Blackest Night Superman.
I was just going to say, if you look at this ad in the comic,
yeah,
that's a bit much.
That's a pile. Pile of fucking comics.
It's not that bad. It's not complete.
And they keep adding to it, too, because there's actually, they don't have the Blackest Night JSA listed here, which I know that I just read about.
That is coming out, right.
And JSA, or the Blackest Night Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Christ.
So, yeah, they're gonna milk it.
They're going to fuck it all up.
Yeah, they're gonna milk it. But let's talk about the first issue.
Okay.
And now that it is out, and I'll just say I absolutely loved it. I had a really... just total geeky fanboy experience reading this. It hit every fanboy note, and I loved it. I thought that Johns did a really nice job of subtly, or maybe not so subtly, introducing a lot of the deceased characters in the DCU, and at least giving you some frame of reference as to why they would be important enough to come back as Black Lanterns, which we all know as they're listing off these people, you know, the Freedom Fighters and, you know, past girlfriends and you know, all these fallen heroes that, you know, and all of the fallen Green Lanterns that, yeah, they're going to come back as Black Lanterns. You know this going into it. But, I thought they did a nice job with it.
And I don't know how much of this maybe he didn't do or it's already been done, but I like some of the stuff what I saw to be sort of him slipping in pieces of mythology to the DC universe.
Yes.
Like you had the day Superman died the original time is now a national day of mourning,
which has never been.
I never read that before.
Yeah,
and so now it's like, okay, well, that's, you know,
that is
canon.
now
and then you have the, which was kind of weird, but the whole morgue thing in the bottom of the,
that was a little fucking creepy.
That was a little weird. I was like, really, they have a morgue down there for remains of
Alexander Luther's?
That was kind of
underneath the JLA trophy room. They have the JLA morgue.
Yeah, which was kind of weird and stuff like that. That he like uses the opportunity to slip in these pieces of mythology to the DC universe now that I'm sure other writers and you know, people will take.
I got a question. Maybe you know this, Sal. But when Hal was talking to Barry in the morgue,
mm-hmm.
and Hal said that Dick Grayson, Nightwing, found the plot that people wanted to get the remains of these characters. When did that happen? Was that Battle for Bloodhaven? Was that part of that whole thing?
They were like Frankensteining different.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Hopefully they bring that up. So
I don't know.
Bring
back the editor's note.
I missed the old 1970s editor's note. It's like, see issue Nightwing 25.
You know, it's funny you say that because I shit you not, there were a couple of times in this book where I was thinking the exact same thing. It's like, I wish there was an editor's note for that because I don't know what that means I don't know where that came from. And that might have actually been one of the places.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
What'll be funny is the evolution of the editor.
Yeah, Tom.
Tom is an editor's note. I'm actually
somebody needs to hire him. DC needs to hire him.
I'm actually bummed that he's not here because there were a few of the dead characters as they were rattling them off, or the which we'll touch on in a little bit, the construct that Hal made showing Barry all of the dead
that
heroes.
Was cool.
Yeah,
but it's like, you know, I'm just like, shit, I need Tom here. Who is that? But I think we'll see an evolution of the editor's note that instead of individual issues, I bet you're going to start seeing editor's notes that will denote trades that or collections they're in.
That would be helpful.
Yeah,
that would be
let's
very
do
helpful.
It. Let's do it.
It would make sense.
Yeah, but Let's talk about that. I think one of the most poignant moments in the issue was Barry Allen Flash is with Hal, and they're in the JLA morgue. and Barry, who's been away for a long time, still, you know, is catching up, doesn't know what's gone on really since Crisis, and asked Hal how many people have died since I left. And it's a fantastic two-page spread of Hal creating a construct of all of the fallen heroes since Crisis.
That page could have used the editor's note of telling me when this happened, because I was sitting there going, well, is this after Flash Rebirth?
It's because during Barry's, Flash Rebirth.
Or is it
yes.
during it?
Well, in Flash Rebirth, they met during the day, if you recall. I picked it up and I looked at it. I'm like, I think they're in the daytime, and then now they're at night. But
it's a continuation
of
that day.
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that would make more, because I'm sitting there going, it's either got to be right when Barry came back or after all the stuff.
And
when
Blackest Night Zero takes place during this time too.
See, editor's notes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it does. Blackest Night Zero was free comic book day back in May.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes place between the Prelude and GL 43. Is that about right? Remember the Prelude issue, and then the Zero issue, and the editor's note. If you notice. In issue one, it says takes place before the Prelude takes place before Blackest Night Zero. It's like that's the only editor's note we got in the Prelude. Okay. It's like, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's a case, you know, walking through the raindrops, and this may be right after Barry first came back, and he's still trying to
but
get
you
up.
You mentioned
to speed.
Something that I have to disagree with.
Okay.
And that is,
step in line.
No.
It's on.
You said
it's got two podcasts. There's a lot of people.
And you said that this is a Green Lantern centric story and it's not a JLA story. I have to disagree with you, because there's Barry, there's the Atom, there's Hawkman and Hawkgirl. They're in the JLA morgue. Mm-hmm. This is very much a Justice League. It's going to turn out to be a very big Justice League story.
No,
we're all said and done.
It's going
to
be a Hal Jordan story.
It's a
at
Hal
the end
story.
Of the day.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's Blackest Night.
I agree.
It is a Green
Lantern.
Yeah. But
handing out all these rings. They're handing out all these Blackest Night rings. They're all JLA. They're from Earth.
They're going to have a part in it, but at the end of the day, it's going to be
Hal's
Hal.
Story.
Okay.
I mean, it's Blackest Night.
This thing.
That's a Green Lantern. I mean, that is part of the Green Lantern lore. I mean, that's. It's at the end of the day, it's going to be a Green Lantern problem to solve, because it's a Green Lantern problem. I mean, that's, you know, it's their destiny.
It's going to end up being fought.
I mean, the JLA is going to, you know, obviously this is going to be a huge part of the DC universe for the next whatever.
I mean,
there's
still a lot more dead characters they have to bring up.
But I think at the end of the day,
Jason Todd, we talked about the Ted Kords of the world. We got to, they're going to bring them up.
Absolutely. But I think at the end of the day, it'll end up falling
on Hal's shoulders.
Yeah.
That's what
Hal,
it's going to be.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
But he's
part of the JLA.
He's got that whole justice thing going on, and then I don't know what's happening with the JLA after that. But
Robinson has taken over. And they're all tied to the, what?
Uh-oh. No, I love that James Robinson's going to be writing that. Yeah. I'm not crazy about Mark Bagley drawing it, but. That's just me.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think I'm on that boat. All right.
I mean, Bagley's good. I mean, you know, I'm not. It's not that I
don't think you're going to get 100 issues like you did on.
Well, yeah, that's the one thing. Yeah. It's not going to be late. That's for sure.
Oh no,
not with Bagley.
Are you talking about JLA or you're talking about the limited
Justice League? America.
Well, James Robinson's doing that, and then he's going to be writing JLA proper.
Yep.
With Mark Bagley,
which I'm looking forward to. Kind of getting back to Blackest Night here, and I mentioned the double page spread of Hal Jordan's construct. I think it was one of three kind of basic double page spreads that were used to great ability. I think sometimes the double page spread can not be the best storytelling device. I think they get kind of thrown in there for, you know, minimal impact. Good. This one had the double page spread that was the vertical that you had to flip the book around
with them flying in
of all the Green Lanterns, showcasing who the Sector 2814 Green Lanterns
are. Who the stars of the book
Chris.
Thank you.
And then then you have the construct.
Yeah, I don't know. It might not be a Green Lantern book.
I'm just saying, there's another two-page spread in there.
I know.
How's narrating it?
Going back to this, the first two-page spread with the Green Lanterns flying in. You know what I was thinking about most watching that? It's like, David Price has got to be going out of his fucking mind with those floating Green Lantern symbols in front of him.
No, what I was thinking is how much Ivan Rice is going to be able to sell that original art for.
Yeah, no shit.
That's,
oh, yeah.
That's major coin there. Yeah. But you had some fantastic double page spreads, and then some kind of 3/4 page spreads. You had the War of Light, and then you also have all of the zombie Black Lanterns, and made for some really impactful double trucks there, and I thought that Rice and Johns really used that to maximum effect.
Question on the one with the scene with Hal and Barry, mm-hmm. and he shows them everybody's dead, and I just don't know because I don't know their history, but Barry seemed really upset almost the most about Firestorm
Ronnie Raymond.
Did they have a history together, Barry Allen and Ronnie Raymond?
They had a very special relationship. Ronnie used to actually have a backup in Firestorm. Had a backup in the Flash comics back in the '80s.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I don't think that they ever met in those stories.
But
I don't think they ever crossed over. But it's like, oh, he used to be.
I could understand, like, you know, and then it was Ralph and Sue that was the next panel, but it just seemed a little weird to me. Like Ronnie, Raymond? Did anyone give a shit about Ronnie Raymond?
Barry,
you're gonna get letters now, fucker. Yeah. Look out.
Well, you know, and once again, we need Tom here, but Ronnie and Barry and Hal, for that matter, they were teammates on the Justice League, and so Firestorm would have been. But he was a junior member, so
that could be
a big.
I just didn't know. I just didn't honestly. It just seemed a little odd to be that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, John's writing it. There has to be. I mean, there's obviously something there. I just didn't know if you guys knew of some.
Yeah, I would say it's.
I just don't remember like a landmark Firestorm Flash team up.
Right.
That happened.
I don't know how much character development happened in that era of the JLA, but I think it probably was a big brother, little brother. And
yeah, I read it the same way, Chris. I thought, I read it and I thought, my first initial reaction was like, they were buddies? I don't know. But then I just thought, well, yeah, they were on the JLA together. He was like the protege when he first joined.
That's true.
And at that time, you know, Firestorm was basically a teenager. He was a college kid.
Yeah,
so,
with his professor was right.
Professor Stein.
Yeah. I do remember reading those.
So yeah, it would have been, you know.
I was just
kidding
about nobody caring about Ronnie Raymond. For all you Firestorm fans,
I don't give a shit about Ronnie Raymond. I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, while we're talking about Ralph and Sue Dibny, and maybe we'll jump ahead a little bit here to events that take place later, but Ralph and Sue, and this is a very spoiler filled episode, by the way.
Yeah,
what? If they haven't read it by now, fuck them.
They haven't listened to our show and realized that
we just kind of jumped into
spoiled
it. Ralph and Sue passed away, and they had this kind of like nice ghost detective thing going on in the DCU. But they come back as Black Lanterns, and I think they really set up how creepy and detached from their actual humanity.
A zombie elongated man was one of the creepiest fucking things. Ivan Rice did an awesome job. I mean, that page.
Elongated Man should never, ever, ever be that fucking scary.
Well, and that's the thing, too. It's like Elongated Man has always been, you know, he's that goofy, he's guy who stretches and, you know.
His
not
nose
really
twitches whenever there's a mystery.
You know, Ralph was always kind of an interesting.
And he says his line. That was fucking awesome.
I smell a mystery.
With this, that was cool.
Screwed up, and look at his nose, it's all disformed. But I mean, that he was creepy as hell. And I, like I said, Ivan Reis just did an awesome job on that scene. Well, as he's beating,
let's talk
the
about the art
shit.
For a really quick minute, because this guy knocked it out of the park.
You know, I was talking.
I'm using sports references for you.
I was talking about this with another artist who will remain unnamed, but I think that Ivan Reis gets not nearly enough credit, and I think has kind of fallen under an Ethan Van Sciver shadow, because he has a tendency of, you know, Ethan will come in and I believe
I said this a long time ago when Ivan I was talking Rice about Green Lantern, is that I like Ivan Reis better on all the Green Lantern stuff. As much as I like Van Sciver,
I think there's a perception sometimes that some fans think of Ivan Reis as
Van Sciver's backup.
Well, as Ethan Van Sciver light, and he is not. He is.
No, he's amazing.
He fucking brings
his stuff.
He brings it, and this was his storytelling incredibly tight. I was never lost from one panel to the next in this.
Yeah.
And just you know, talking about this scene with Elongated Man and Ralph and Sue Dibny and Hawkman and Hawkgirl are kind of central to the story in certain parts, and there is a massive beatdown. It's you can tell that these Black Lanterns, that they are incredibly aggressive, incredibly powered, and Hawkman is a badass. I mean, he is.
Yeah,
a
that's you know, it's hell funny because yeah. As I was reading that, I was sitting there going, waiting for the point where Hawkman just gets pissed off and kicks their asses, and yeah, he got mad, but he didn't kick their asses.
He got beat down.
Yeah, that he did.
Beat with his own mallet.
Well, since we already talked about spoilers, I mean, it looks like they're going to be the next Black Lantern.
Well, it's showing kind of what the Black Lanterns do is that they kill people, they eat their hearts, and that gives them power, because you saw the power meter, you know, it's now at 0.01 mm-hmm. you know, percent power.
Well, that was the other day, it was really low. And yeah. two hearts only gave them a 0.1%.
Oh, yeah.
They gotta eat a lot of hearts.
They're gonna kill a lot of people.
But the other thing that I thought was interesting about the whole Black Lantern stuff, and he talked about it in this, and then earlier, it might have been the prelude or whatever, was the idea that the Black Lanterns are trying to set things right, that there's characters that have died and mm-hmm. come back, and that yeah. according to the Black Lanterns, they need to set the universe right by making sure they stay dead. And Hawkman and Hawkgirl
do that repeatedly.
They just keep coming back. They're the worst offenders in that you know idea. So that the fact that they were the first killed is you know kind of poignant. But
I don't know if anybody else here is a Hawkman fan.
I've become
I
one.
Am.
I haven't mm-hmm. been for. I never really was. I always kind of didn't like Hawkman. Mm-hmm. But John's Hawkman,
the Return of Hawkman,
I was always a huge fan of the Golden Age Hawkman.
Really,
I liked the concept of the Egyptian prince being reincarnated, yakety schmack. Then I wasn't a big fan of Thanagarian Hawkman, but when they relaunched Hawkman in JSA, then they got him in his own book. That shit was amazing.
Yeah,
and it really brought me to the core of being a Hawkman fan. But what I wanted to know is there's been so much shit going on with Hawkman since then, since John's left that book and since mm-hmm. they canceled the book. In fact, there was even a special by, help me out, a guy who did, I can't believe
the
I
Hawkman special?
Yeah, he did Jim Starlin.
Oh,
Jim
yeah,
Starlin
yeah, yeah, yeah.
did the special where they essentially erased the Golden Age history from Hawkman, and he became the Thanagarian Hawkman again. Now, when I read this issue,
just Starlin just being going off.
Well, thank you, because I read that and I was like, bullshit.
I mean, for whatever reason, Starlin just writes stuff that it does. I mean, that whole what was the thing he did?
The
Death of the New Gods. I mean, wrote that, and it had no bearing on
Final Crisis.
Final Crisis.
Which, well, everyone, but that and Countdown. That was all a big clusterfuck anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't take Starlin's Hawkman
as canon.
Well, I'm not going to, because reading this, the scenes with Hawkman and Hawkgirl here,
it goes
to where Jeff Johns left them.
Yeah.
And they are acting the exact same way. Yeah. It's like nothing else has happened.
I you know, some people cringe at John's dialogue. I think it fits the comic book medium pretty well. It's like, yeah, if you say it out loud, it sounes really fucking cheesy. But I think
what are you doing reading comic books out loud?
Well, I don't. Well,
he reads them to the blind.
In that case,
on a Tuesday night,
that's
I go to children's hospitals. Okay.
Chris reads the line. .com.
If he's not reading comics, he's reading porn.
Don't talk about my work with sick children like that.
I apologize.
I thought that, yeah, a little bit of cheese, but I thought it was very, very good inside the comic book medium is whenever Kendra, hot girl, is talking about the hourglass that, mm-hmm. you know, every time that she admits to Carter Hall that she loves him. Then the hourglass turns over and it's just a matter of time until they die
violently.
I thought that scene was done really well. I thought it was perfect timing on that. Mm-hmm. To the point where, you know, she says, I love, and then gets stabbed through the chest, but I thought it really worked. I mean, I thought I didn't think it was, cheesy or anything. I mean, I thought, you know, because she sat there and explained why mm-hmm. she didn't, but she was compelled to anyway. Yeah. I think that, you know, that it worked really well because of that.
I did. And, you know, kind of going back to, how the Black Lanterns are going to be very sensitive to the people. And it was even in the prelude issue, Green Lantern 43, about everyone that died and then everyone that's kind of come back. And mm-hmm. so they made a distinction there. So they're definitely setting that up as being pretty, pretty important. But it's John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, who comes back and reveals himself to Hal and Barry. And the first lines out of his mouth are, you shouldn't be back. You should both be dead.
They leave it there.
Yeah.
Shit's going down.
Yeah.
And John looks like a badass.
Why?
Because they didn't put that stupid fucking elongated head on him. Yeah. It was the old school John, and he looked bad in that black uniform that they kind of redid, you know, the style of his original uniform. He looked like a badass.
I saw that and I got giddy. I was like, oh, I can't. Yeah. I want this fucker to come back.
Yeah.
And Hal's
almost rooting
John.
For the Black Lantern.
I am, yeah. Like,
let's see him kick some ass.
Yeah, they should be dead, fuckers.
Let's see how bad John really
is. What you get for coming back? Well, it is kind of funny because it is like there's this meta text in there about, like, you know, as comic fans, we from time to time complain about the fact that nobody ever dies, you know, and they always come back. Yeah. And that's what they're.
You made me buy the double-sized issue where they died, and now you brought them back,
and now they're back 3 months later.
Well, I want my money back.
Are we going to get another 0 hour out of this?
I don't know. Maybe.
Everything reset. Everybody's alive again now. You know.
Well, I think that is going to be an interesting thing because I have a sneaking suspicion that they're going to use Blackest Night as a vehicle to bring different characters.
You think Johns isn't going to use this to bring Ted Kord back? Or, you know, I mean, there's...
Ooh, Mike just perked up over there.
Absolutely. Come on.
John Jones. You knew the Martian
John
Man.
Jones. Yeah.
He's going to come back. Maybe Ralph and Sue. You know,
I would think
that's what I was always when I first heard of this storyline. The first thing I thought of was like, oh, I wonder who they're going to bring back at the end of it.
I mean,
like,
I think half
stay,
the,
well, and
the villains, what villains could they bring?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, really, that'd be really cool.
Hey, you know,
I mean, here's my question with the Black Lanterns real quick. Are
the Blackest Lanterns?
The Blackest Lanterns. Are they enemies of just the Green Lanterns? Or are they enemies of the whole color spectrum?
I think they're enemies of life.
Yeah, enemies of life in general.
So
you
have any color, you're Roy G. Biv, it doesn't matter. You're going down.
Well, I think they're...
Well, it's not just
death.
They are
anti-life.
Yeah, they're the epitome of death. They're death incarnate. Mm-hmm. They want everything. I think they want everyone dead.
So the war of light could all come together and then
black.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Because, go ahead. Okay. Steve has a little theory that he's been working on. And speaking
in your spare time, just penciling some things.
I got a chart.
You got a chalkboard.
I've got a chart going on.
Whiteboard. Maybe.
Yeah.
Speaking of
done some equations.
Of anti-life and equations. Of who may be not behind, but working in...
Let's preface this really quickly by saying I read the prelude to Blackest Night with the origin of the Black Hand. Because I've just gone through this first issue of Blackest Night like four times. I can't find what I was talking about. So I think it was in that issue. I got the impression that...
Scar?
Somebody else was behind the Black Lanterns, behind Scar. That sort of the face.
She, I think,
And then I was reminded that the anti-monitor is the power battery behind the giant Black Lantern. But that Scar is essentially answering to someone else.
I could definitely see that because she seems like at times you know, she's like speaking a mantra, not her own thoughts. Like there's something, you know, there was, compelling her.
There was definitely something in that issue that got
almost
me thinking
like
that. And
the envoy for, you know.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I thought of too was like when I thought about somebody's pulling Scar's strings or just telling her what to do, I thought, let's see, Blackest Night, evil, dark things, dark side. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but.
You just ruined the entire series.
But I thought that Darkseid being the main bad guy in this would make sense.
What is Darkseid?
It would make sense because of what Grant Morrison did in Final Crisis. If you stop and think about Final Crisis as being, it's perpetual. It's something that's constantly happening because time broke down during Final Crisis.
Right.
So all the stuff that we're reading is happening. Well, essentially, it's all happening at the same time still. And Darkseid has spent, how long did he spend falling through dimensions? So we don't know where he's at. We don't know what he's been doing. That motherfucker could wound up in the middle of somewhere.
Of Sector 666.
There you go.
Could be. Yeah, Darkseid.
That was a little obvious in my opinion. I'm just saying. Sector 666. It's the dark place.
You knew something was going to happen.
It is the number of the bees.
Which, another one of our astute panelists, we were talking before we started recording.
Thank God we have some astute panelists.
I know,
finally.
It's kind of refreshing, isn't it?
Me, you, and Tom, forget it.
You, sir, Mr. Chris Marshall, who I'm pointing at, you've been reading and catching up on Alan Moore's stories of the DCU.
Well, that's a great trade. Everybody should pick it up, not only for the two great Green Lantern stories, but also the Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, and also The Killing Joke. that little soft tail was in it, too. So everybody should go pick up that trade. In fact, I wish DC would
I suggest the hardcover of The Killing Joke because the recoloring on it's awesome. But go ahead.
Do you like... Oh, I don't want to get into the Brian Boland recoloring.
Yes, it's awesome.
Okay.
Still ain't worth the money, though. It was overpriced.
Pick up the
trade. I mean, I bought
the trades in there.
But it was overpriced.
There are two stories in the DC Universe by Alan Moore, and one of them, there's a good Swamp Thing story in there too, but the one story has got the foretelling of Abin-Sur, and we don't have it in front of me here at the comic book store, unfortunately.
But it's basically him.
The first story is with the prophecy of Abin-Sur going to the Death Planet, being off limits, and there was a ship that crash landed on the planet, and Abin-Sur goes to rescue or goes to see who is still surviving from the crash. And it turns out to be the children of the White Loeb, who are now part of the Sinestro Corps.
Jeff Loeb?
You think, where's John Suntress?
He is the whitest Loeb.
So those characters are now part of the Sinestro Corps, which is another foretelling. But there is also a couple of prophecies. One, that Blackest Night will come. Two, the prophecy of Sodom Yat, who, of course, we don't know his fate right
now. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And also,
Sodom Yat's an Alan Moore character?
He was brought up, yes. And, oh, yeah. Ah. He's got muscles like a Rob Lowe or like a Rob Liefeld character, too. it's huge.
Right now, where we are, spoilers, if you're not reading Green Lantern Corps, that Sodom Yat, he sacrificed himself to turn Daxam's sun yellow.
Right. To save the planet.
A yellow sun.
And so all the Daxamites are now powered. Like
new
Kryptonians.
Krypton. Right.
It's new Daxam.
We'll see what happens with that. And also
I think that's gonna be the
it
end.
It also
of
foretold
new
the telling of Abin-Sur's death. Which was very cool. But the second story in that was, and of course I don't have it with me. It's another Green Lantern Corps annual, I know. But it had the tale of, get her name again.
Katmatui.
Katmatui. Kamandu. And the story in that book was titled In Blackest Night. And I'll tell it again real quick. She goes to this forbidden planet to find a...
Same planet as...
No, a completely different planet, which is encased in black shadow, which I told you guys reminded me of the...
Pitch Black.
Pitch Black. The Chronicles of Riddick. Yes, the Vin Diesel movie. So the entire planet is encased in black shadow, but she finds a being there who is, it kind of looks like a cross between a human and a whale or a dolphin or something like that. But he is white. He is completely white colored. she has to find a Green Lantern for this planet, for this sector, because there is none. And so she puts the ring on this character, and this character becomes a Green Lantern, but yet he stays on his planet. She goes off to do whatever,
and
she eventually dies, or mm-hmm. she's a girlfriend of Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling, going back to the title of In Blackest Night, that this character, I forget his name,
is going to be
three
pretty,
syllable name,
yeah.
could have a potential influence. I mean, Alan Moore has definitely influenced Geoff Johns.
Well, you figure if the name of the story is called In Blackest Night,
and it's a black shadow world, and this
well,
character
that goes back
can
before
see
Alan
through
Moore,
darkness and blackness, that's the metaphor that I took from it.
Man, you guys really fucking think about comics a lot more
like,
than
and
I do.
It's like you're sitting trades, man.
Good Lord.
It's like you're sitting with Vince. It's like Vince is here.
Yeah, kind of. It's like, holy shit, I don't think that far ahead on the, I just, that was good. I'll wait for the next one.
Well, that, I mean, but that's what Johns does. He goes back and he mines the stuff, and it's, you know, talking about the moment
it's like
with
Barry. But it's almost like a setup. Alan Moore set this up. I mean, he set up the war of light.
He goes,
light
in 25 years, there will be a man named Geoff Johns.
That's why he's the greatest.
And the smart artists and creators will go back mm-hmm. and dig up his stuff. Not like a, who you just alluded to, Steve, regarding...
Starlin.
Yeah. Getting rid of the Golden Age Hawkman. That's bullshit.
Exactly.
you don't get rid of a character. You take out... What he did, like a James Robinson did with mm-hmm. Starman.
Oh, God, yeah.
And take that and recreate it for today's age and do something new with it. Don't write off history.
Change it completely.
No.
That's what Geoff Johns has been known for recently, is taking these characters and taking all the aspects of their continuity and putting them together in a sensible way.
Yeah.
It's data mining. What one thing can you get out of it? Oh, Sodom,
well, there's
yeah.
so
Ooh,
much
the hell
there.
Sodom, yeah. Let's do something.
I mean, there's so much there for, you know, available for that too, because, you know, like we talked about before, back, you know, in the Silver Age and Golden Age, good God, but the Silver Age,
off the wall
shit. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of character development. There wasn't a whole lot of ongoing story development. It was, you know, sort of one and done stuff. But there's a lot of stuff that
blank
you could
slates,
pull
man.
From and grab things and then
what
build
John,
on it.
What Johns did with Black Adam.
Yeah,
oh God,
Black
great.
Adam was phenomenal.
Yeah, was wonderful.
Yeah, he turned this, you know, cookie cutter sort of villain into one of the most fascinating characters in the DCU, in my opinion. And
absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's what Johns does so well. That's why, you know, I mean.
I have one question for you guys, though. We talked about the Black Lantern's anti-life, okay? And you see John Jones, Martian Manhunter, going up to
Hal and Barry
and Hawkman and Hawkgirl saying, "You should be dead." But yet you see the rings going into graves that are characters that are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Wayne, we now know, is dead. Arthur Curry is dead. So,
well, there's two.
What's
there's
the
two,
thought on
one
that?
Is they're building
an
army
of
Black Lanterns, but the sort of mission statement behind that army, at least in this first phase of whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
is to fix the wrongs in the universe. The people, the characters that should have stayed dead, that died and came back, they're killing them off and
so
turning
your,
them into
that's
Black
your
Lantern.
Responsibility
that's
responsibility of the zombie characters.
Yeah, they're resurrecting the zombies because they're creating their army.
Okay.
You're dead, you're powerful, we're going to give you a ring because we can and we want an army. But the sort of mission behind that army at this point is to fix what they call the imbalance of
the
things
imbalance.
In the universe,
okay.
because these characters died and came back and they should be dead.
They've unbalanced.
So
Barry,
Hal, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, they all died and came back. And according to the Black Lantern
some have died and have stayed dead.
Well,
they're just automatic Green Lantern.
If you're a Black Lantern, you're going to send out a shit ton of rings to resurrect the dead.
Right.
Who are you going to go get? Well, there's a shit ton of really powerful dead characters out there, zombies or corpses.
And then the characters you kill,
become Black Lanterns too.
That's pretty convenient.
Yeah, it's resetting the scales of life and death.
One little thing, it was just a little tiny thing they threw in there, but the idea that all the black rings flying out sounded like flies.
That was cool. That was a nice little, actually,
a little sad because one of the Green Lanterns that came back, and that's one of the things is that we talked about the JLA morgue, but there's also a morgue on Oa of all the fallen Green Lanterns, mm-hmm. and one of the Green Lanterns that came back was bzz, bzz. Well, I just
he's like one issue. Come on,
which one is he?
He's the little fly.
He's the insect.
Oh, I see him. Okay,
and I thought that was such a. I mean, he fought the good fight and sacrificed himself, and poor little.
Well, maybe you know.
And you know, a lot of hardcore Green Lantern fans. How many of these characters can really excited that Chip is been reanimated?
Going back real quick to Alan Moore, and if we're going to spoil it, I'm going to spoil it big time.
Okay. Oh shit!
One of the things that Alan Moore wrote was that in the war, which apparently this is the war, that the planet Oa will be disintegrated into dust,
mm-hmm.
and Mogo will be the last Green Lantern.
Ooh.
That was written.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know, okay.
As it is written, so it shall be.
That's one more, baby.
So say we all.
They may have
that
to,
would be pretty
you know,
cool. They all fall back to Mogo, and Mogo will become the new Oa.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at that, but
I don't think that the Guardians of the Universe are going to survive this. I think that the
Ganthet really? Could.
Well, Ganthet is a Blue Lantern.
He's
not with the rest of the Guardians. Right. What is it, Ganthet and Rain?
Rain, yeah.
I think the Guardians are going to get wiped out in this.
Again? And
have they been wiped out before?
Haven't the Guardians died once before? I don't know. I am not a Green Lantern fan.
That's I don't know what happened.
But I wanted to ask you guys, because mm-hmm. obviously you are, what's the whole concept behind the War of Light?
Because
that was a prophecy.
Yeah, that's the prophecy.
And so now the Guardians,
the War of Light brings about the Blackest Night.
All right, and the Guardians took out the green power and kind of suppressed
the whole thing with the Guardians was they were trying to stop the War of Light because the War of Light is started by the release of too much emotion.
Okay.
So the whole thing with them was the lack of emotion. Everything was order, 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 and that was and John's kind of, you know, retconned all that.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with order was always the, sort of the way the Guardians were, but he kind of used that to build, you know, retcon this whole prophecy.
Okay.
So they were trying to all along stop the War of Light.
Mm-hmm.
By suppressing emotion.
Okay.
But now it's been released. All these different lanterns, it's all emotion-based.
And you'll notice that the Green Lanterns, will is not an emotion.
Yeah.
It's willpower. Right.
It is the will to live.
And what's also cool, I mean, I think you alluded to this on one of your many podcasts, Chris, that the
I was tracked.
That the spectrum of light, the Roy G. Biv, green is in the middle. Three are in one end, somewhat evil.
Mm-hmm.
Three on the other end, somewhat good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's that spectrum. And
green it is the balance. And I was talking to Mike last time. We were talking about, you know, white and the White Lantern. And
right.
Actually, if you look upon the, you know, the spectrum, you know, this is how I understand it anyway, is that if the combination of all of the light in the spectrum is white.
And the complete lack of light is black. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, that was actually leading into my next question. I was going to ask if the purpose of the Black Lanterns is an anti-life purpose. So wouldn't the Black Lanterns want to just extinguish all the light?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's ultimately.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was alluding to. Right?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think
alluding, Chris. Just fucking be straight up. All right, I'm sick of that shit.
Stop dancing around.
Tap dancing around the question.
Yeah, I think the Black Lanterns want to eliminate life. That's what.
But that's easier said than done. So now, right now, they're trying to build up enough power to do that, I think.
Okay.
I mean, that would make sense to me.
And if Ralph and Sue are any indication, they're going to be not easy to deal with.
Fucking badasses.
Because whenever Elongated Man puts a beat down on.
Yeah, exactly. If Ralph Dibny is a fucking badass, what is John Jones going to be? Holy shit.
Yeah. He was already on a power scale with Superman.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that Sue doesn't speak at all?
She's just...
She just holds the spear.
Yeah, she just like stands there.
She just guts people.
She just speared Kendra.
Well, I mean,
I noticed that Kendra and Carter are in their house with their helmets on. It's like, relax, man. take it off.
Take it easy, you know. And stay relax, a while.
God, talk
know?
About taking work home with you. This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop, and I do indeed love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Let's talk about some of the other Black Lanterns that we can expect to see. You know, obviously Arthur Curry, Aquaman, is going to pop up. It's funny because I saw some internet buzz, some people that were voicing their displeasure because they're like, oh, I wanted to see this one and this one and this one. It's like, it's the first issue. Yeah, don't worry. Aquaman is going to fucking be there. Just relax. It's
we've
like,
got seven more to go.
Why isn't Superman from Earth 2?
He's going to smell really bad, that fish.
Dead fish. But I thought
buried in the ground too for a
some,
while.
Some very interesting choices. We're gonna see Captain Boomerang and Johns, who loves writing the Flash Rogues, you know, obviously does it so, you know, probably better than anyone ever has. We're also gonna see Len Snart's sister,
mm-hmm.
which has been a major motivating force for him as Johns has written him. So I thought those were a couple interesting choices of people that we're going to see, because this isn't just going to be heroes against Black Lanterns. I think we're going to see a lot of the villains of the DCU or the rogues of the DCU are going to be involved in this as well.
One thing just hit me when you said that. Uh-huh. When Hal is talking to Barry, mm-hmm. about having they're doing the morning day, the day of mourning, I should say, and the Flash Rogues are having their day of mourning at their hidden cemetery.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And Hal turns to Barry and says, yeah, apparently they've got this hidden cemetery. And
nobody's been able to find it.
Yeah, and Barry's like, oh, I'll find it. And I'm like, it occurred to me right there, when all these dead fuckers come back to life, yeah, you're going to find it real quick. They're all going to pop out of the grave.
That was a great line from Barry. Barry's like, give me a second. I'll find it. I'll scour the earth in 3 seconds.
And then he'll call Wally a wimp.
Oh,
damn. What have you been doing, Flash?
Some interesting if we look at
the double-faced spread where Hal shows Barry all the people have died, and which may be a prelude to some of the characters.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, like, you know, Ted Kord's in there and Aquaman's in there. And yeah,
Bawana Beast.
Wannabeast on there?
He's right there.
Yeah. Oh, but they have Dr. Midnight and Dr. Fate.
Crimson Fox.
Sky Man, formerly Star Spangled Kid.
Is that Nightwing?
Which one? Where?
Right here. Who is that? Doesn't that look like Nightwing?
Oh, no. That's a Legion character. Oh, that's Vibe.
That's
Vibe. Yeah.
That's Vibe.
He's from JLA
Detroit. JLA
Detroit.
Motherfucker.
Oh,
really?
Oh, he's got the belt like Nightwing, the weird crosshatch belt.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Hawk?
Turn him the other way around, yeah. And then you'll see he's a little Puerto Rican dude.
Phantom
and just go out.
All right, now you're okay.
The question
there. Yeah.
The original Dr. Midnight.
Adam,
there's a lot of JSA
Aztec
characters.
Airwave.
What's her name from Doom Patrol? The
Tempest.
Mike Norton says the original
Tempest.
Blue Beetle.
Who's this dude? I know the costume.
Oh, both of them?
That's the Tarantula.
What about Jade?
From All-Star Squadron.
Jade coming back. Former Green
Lantern. Jade is going to be back.
Big time.
I always liked Jade.
Yeah, I like Jade too.
I loved Infinity Inc.
Yeah, Infinity Inc. was pretty
Red
awesome.
Red Rocket 7.
Red Rocket
I thought,
7.
I thought an interesting one was Al Pratt, the original Adam.
Mm.
The little short one, right?
The JSA. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Who are those two guys? Al Pratt.
Al Pratt is the original Al Pratt is the Golden Age Adam.
Yeah.
No, no, no. They're mourning. Who are they mourning? There's
that's
what, Nuquan?
That's
you set that up for me.
It's Damage and
Adam Smasher.
Adam Smasher.
Who is who now?
Damage is the one in the blue.
No, no, no. Who's son?
Like, Damage is Al Pratt's son.
Yes.
He is.
And Nuquan is Adam Smasher.
He just took over the mantle.
He was his godson.
Okay.
He's Adam Smasher now.
That must have happened after
Adam Smasher. Yeah,
he was Nuquan in Infinity. Yeah.
That happened after I dropped JSA.
The Mohawk and everything.
Oh yeah. No. I'm right there with
Nuquan.
Yeah,
Nuquan is Adam Smasher. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what do you think of the whole Mira?
He got rid of the Mohawk
deal about burying him on land and not in sea.
I haven't read a Aquaman story in like ever.
Okay. I thought it was a neat touch. I thought it was a really cool touch. But this whole issue, a lot of things I thought kind of throw you off trying to figure out exactly what continuity is.
Right.
This continuity, you know, what fits where. Like Aquaman, he's gone through so many changes in the past couple of years, but the way she's talking about him and the fact that he had a surface father and things, that's all Golden Age origin. And I know that Didio has been trying to push Aquaman back in that direction. I would rather see Badass Sea King again, but
well, they mentioned that they mentioned that I think Hal told Barry that even Aquaman was resurrected, but it turned out to be not him or something. That might have been in the prologue as well.
Yeah,
I think they were referring to the new Aquaman.
Right, they were referring to that, the new one.
No.
The one
who sucked.
Here's something that may tie into Steve's dark side theory. Black Hand, the skull that he is carrying around, it's alluded that it's Bruce Wayne's skull.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is he carrying around Bruce Wayne's skull because if the corpse isn't all there, that it won't become a Black Lantern? So this is keeping the Bruce Wayne corpse from being reanimated. Is there a source of power in the skull, which maybe goes back to because Darkseid killed Bruce with the Omega Sanction that this ties into?
And it's in that. The last panel, it's Bruce's skull that spits up a couple rings for Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
Oh,
I didn't notice.
It's like that's where it's. So what the hell?
I don't know what that means.
It's like a fucked up Blackest Night Batman Pez dispenser.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, rise.
So we've got. We got 7 more issues to go. My questions will be answered. Yeah. I expect.
We got a lot of reading to do.
Yeah, I was thinking it's going to go into February of next year. So
can I? And it sort of is in the same vein, but it's a different book. I wanted to bring up real quick was has anybody reading Rick Remender's Punisher?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that he brought back a bunch of these old dead D-list Punisher villains. Mm-hmm. The last issue with these villains, he kind of. Is the first time we kind of see them doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the whole issue is sort of finding out what these villains are doing or what they're planning and kind of some of the changes that have been made to them and all. But I thought it was fantastic. And he, you know, really turned these, you know, like I said, D-list nobody villains into some really dangerous seeming characters, and especially the art by...
It's not Opinion on this art. Let me grab it. I think Opinion's art. I'll go get the issue.
Well, whoever the artist is.
I'll just say a whole new array of cannon fodder.
Yeah, well, seem to be way more dangerous. Yeah. And
well, they should be for the Punisher.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and what's also cool is they only have a certain amount of time to live or get the Punisher. And also, we talked about editor's notes earlier. They had a whole list of who these characters are.
Well, in the last issue, they had in the back.
Yeah, in the back. That was really neat.
I can't pronounce his name.
Oh, it's Tan Eng Huat?
What?
What?
Why are you saying it like that?
H-U-A-T. And I just thought he did a absolutely fantastic job on these characters and the art of the issue in general. But for some reason, the pages with these, you know, villains especially, I thought were really creepy and you know, ominous and, you know,
it's stories like this and stories like Blackest Night, I think, that really show that the old adage is true. There's really no bad characters.
Yeah, yeah, just bad. You know, yeah, you can
just bad fucking writers.
Bad writers. No, you're, and I got to say, I think Remender's really, really hitting a home run with this. With this book, it just fits him really well.
It's a perfect book for Rick.
Well, yeah. But not only that, but I think Rick's also, I think he's also been able to blend like his sensibilities of stuff and like his really outrageous creative ideas with a character like the Punisher in a mainstream book, you know, in a Marvel book, and really kind of blend not only the creative, crazy, zany stuff that we know Rick can do, but tell a really good story at the same time and get into these characters. And I think this last issue was so far my favorite of the seven or eight, or what I think it's issue
on seven.
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 I just thought it was a fantastic issue and really, really enjoyed it.
What's interesting is that I think that Rick is the perfect writer for mainstream 616 Punisher, because you can put that, you know, kind of crazy, mentally just nuts Punisher, but put some gags in it with the D-list villains. Mm-hmm. And I think he's perfect for that. They just announced the new creative team for the new Punisher Max. And did you see that?
I did, but it reminded me who it is.
It's Jason Aaron, yes, and Steve Dillon.
Yes, that's
what a very great cool team.
Well, you know how I feel about Jason Aaron's writing. I mean, I think he's one of the best writers in comics to me. Scalped is still.
It's like I wouldn't want to see those creative teams switched. I don't know how well Rick would do a Punisher Max, and I don't know how well Jason would do.
It'd be interesting to see with Dillon and Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm. So Aaron's off Ghost Rider?
I don't know. I figure Jason can write a few books at a time. I know
busy
that.
Man.
Well, Ghost Rider's taking a break.
Kind of, sort of. Ghost Rider, the ongoing series, is going to go on a brief hiatus while Jason is doing a mini series, which kind of bridges the gap between some stuff that's going on. So he's still writing Ghost Rider, but the main
series. He can write more than one.
Yeah, yeah.
What else is he doing? He's doing Ghost Rider. He's doing Scalped. What's he writing?
Well, he'll be doing Punisher Max.
Well, no, I know, but is there anything else?
Oh,
that's it. Come on, you know, three books a month.
There you go.
He goes
there
from one to three like that in a couple years.
Yeah,
with as many, you know, with Marvel putting out the occasional 39 issues on a week, you never know who's writing one after. Just don't put him on X-Men.
Whoa,
he could make it good.
He might.
He might.
I actually like what Matt Fraction's doing, and I have been out of X-Men for so long.
I've been kind of perusing Fraction's X-Men a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit more of the fun.
Yeah, you know, it's not too bad. It's not. I get a little tired of the little. Every time you see a character, he puts a little bubble that tells us who they are, and then a clever little thing about him. I'm a little sick of that.
You have to do that with the X-Men.
But
who the fuck is Sand?
But the story's actually pretty good. It's been pretty good, pretty solid. X-Men. And I'm like you. Yeah. I haven't read X-Men. Yeah. I haven't cared about X-Men in
X-Men First Class was my X-Men. That's what I loved. X-Men First Class.
We had fun talking
fuckers had to pull that out from me.
Well, we had fun talking with Parker a couple weeks ago.
Loved that.
Oh, Parker's great. I
was here for that. I'm not here, but I was here.
You were here?
Yeah, I was here.
Here.
I was shopping.
Oh. Okay. Well,
so I heard it.
You just came in, bought a few books.
People do shop here.
Believe it or not.
Occasionally.
I tell you what, you guys, you got any other books you want to talk to or talk about?
I could. I don't know. You want me to?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm gonna dig up an email here.
I got it. I picked up a book on, well, Vince B's recommendation. I was looking for some manga, and he had talked about a book.
He's your guy to talk to.
20th Century Boys by I can't
some Japanese guy.
Some Japanese dude that's very well known in Japan and in the manga world. But I picked up 20th Century Boys Volume 1 and absolutely I read it on the plane on the way back from Vegas and loved it. Absolutely thought it was fantastic.
Said it was kind of like a manga version of It.
It reminded me of kind of like a Stephen King, a Stephen King It or It with The Stand, a little bit of The Stand. It's basically the story is about this group of kids that grow up together in Japan, but that they could be any kids anywhere. And I think Vince actually said that before, everyone reading it, you know, if you had a group of friends you hung out with when you were a kid, you will, you know, immediately attached to these characters and the stories of what they're doing. But
it's the story, Stand By Me of manga.
Yeah, it's very much. It's got a very Stand By Me feel to it. But it's the it's this group of kids that grow up. But the story's told in
flashback.
So kind of like in the present time.
Yeah, that's where the
although it starts. It's a little confusing in the very beginning. The first few pages of it are a little confusing because you have no idea what's going on, and it's like jumps around. But once the story gets going, you learn about the one main character, and he owns a grocery store kind of thing. Is something going on?
Mike's doing a little dance.
Mike's dancing with a pretzel. Just picture that.
But what happens in the present day is one of their group dies, and it sort of sets off this event where they all get back together for his funeral, and they start, talking about him and stories about, when they were kids. And they start to realize that they've sort of all forgotten certain things. Like one of them sort of remembers something. The rest of them don't remember it, and they start, trying to think about what's going on, and then all of a sudden you start going to the flashbacks of them growing up in those stories, and the whole thing it's leading towards something much bigger, where what it sort of alludes to is that at some point in time they have to save the world, and it all relates back to
me of college.
There you go. It all relates back to something that happened when they were kids. So you don't know any of it. And even at the end of this first volume, because there's like 22 volumes of this thing, you don't really know what the event is or what's happening, but it all sort of is just like this prelude to what's going on. But it was just really, the thing that I really liked about it more than a lot of manga that I've read, and even a lot of American comics I read, is just the connection I had to the characters really quickly. I just, attached to these characters very quickly because of
cared for them.
Yeah, I really did. And wanted to know what was going to happen next. It was just a really fantastic book, and I can't recommend it enough.
Mike, you picked that up, whenever we were in Fort Wayne. Have you read it yet? Nice.
Are you? Is it? It's still. Good. Yeah. I just got the second one in the mail, so I'm gonna dive into that one. But the same writer or artist writer does another book that I've heard really good things about called Pluto, and I got the first volume of that, so I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But it was good. I mean, it really, really was good because it was like it had a big concept behind it.
Yeah.
But it was just really about these kids growing up and then what happens to them later. I mean. None of them are, they're just regular people, and something happens. There's something going to happen, and there's this mysterious figure that seems to be behind it all, but you really just sort of get attached to these kids and the silly things that happens to them when growing up, and because there's about four or five different little flashbacks to them and different things, and none of it's like. It doesn't ever try and be like, oh, this is the moment where things changed in their life. It's just like here's a moment out of time when they were kids, and this is what happened. And there's it does definitely weave the times where you're going back and forth and learning.
Do you get a sense that it's building up to something?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, in the first chapter of the first one, you're basically told that these characters saved the world.
Okay.
And way in the future, they're being honored for saving, the entire planet. You have no idea why or what exactly how that gets to, but you're kind of told that in the very beginning. So, and as the story's going along, like I said, their friend dies, and they start questioning it, and they start, especially the one main character, he starts really trying to figure out what's going on. And as he starts learning stuff, you start to see that there's something happening in the present time with this mysterious sort of cult leader character that's that maybe had something to do with their friend's death. Cool. And it's cool. Really, really cool. But in no time, other than in the very, very beginning of the book, in the first couple of pages, there's sort of this weird out of sync couple of stories that he tells you about and never goes back to. So you don't really know what the hell it is. Even after finishing it, I still don't know what it meant. And I assume at some point you'll learn.
Yeah.
So you're kind of confused. But after that, it's not like a really complex kind of story. It's really well told. So you completely understand what's going on, and you really can get into the characters. And that comes through like the whole story, is that you're always attached to these characters and what they're doing. And this story just sort of is what you're following. It's not, you know, it's not like this oppressive thing that's, you know,
right. They're not beating you over the head with a concept.
It's there. It's, yeah. You know, it's
that's always
their
been
story.
A problem with me with manga, is that I never felt
cool
like
concepts.
Well, it's great concepts, but the characters, I never feel vested.
Same
in
way.
Them.
Same mm-hmm. way. These so. Guys, I absolutely attached to. I mean, they're very.
Maybe it helps that they're kids, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely. I mean, and like I said, them, you know, the things that they do when they're kids, the silly stuff and the trouble they get into and the different, you know, like there's this great story about one character called Donkey, and he's a very sympathetic character, and like he's sort of
I got a friend nobody, with a dog named Donkey.
Well, no, like nobody wants to hang out with him. He's, you know, and he walks around with like a blanket around his neck that he wipes the snot from his nose. His nose is always running. So he's like, you know, his little nerdy character that nobody wants to hang out. But by the end of like this first volume, he's he becomes their friends because of some things that happen, and he helps them, and you know, and they end up being friends with him, and he's actually the character that ends up dying and jumping off a roof, and they think killing himself, but then they find out maybe not, and stuff like, so it's just the stuff like that. The,
poor
you know,
donkey.
Yeah, well, exactly. You're immediately like feel for this kid and but it's never like really heavy handed. It's just really well done. It's really, really well told story. It's just cool. Good story. I mean, it really was.
Nice. Josh Flanagan will like this. Donkey, this dog, is a English and French bulldog mix. It is the cutest dog ever.
Does it just fight itself constantly?
It is a pot roast with four legs and big ears. It is awesome. It is awesome. All right. Well, little 20th Century Boys. I'm going to have to let you borrow Parasite, and which is a manga that I just read that I really enjoyed, and I'll have to borrow 20th Century Boys from you.
It's good. It's really good. And like I said, I'm looking forward to – I got the second volume of that already, and I'm looking forward to Pluto because I've heard good things about that.
I'm actually kind of the manga that I've been reading. I kind of like the biological horror stuff. I'm looking forward to reading Gyo, G-Y-O, mm-hmm. which I picked up a couple weeks ago. And Parasite is really good. So the manga stuff I've read, I think they do the biological horror. They've got a nice feel for that. All them manga people have a nice feel for that.
Them Japs,
yeah.
Whoa,
sorry. No, you know that actually. What the hell? I can't even remember what it was. We were sitting somewhere talking to somebody about something, and we were talking about something Japanese and. And he just kept saying Japs, and I'm like, he wasn't. And
you,
I'm just
realize
like,
how insensitive
you realize
that
this
is
like this isn't 1945,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. You do realize that's an ethnic slur,
right? Don't really
slur,
call
right?
Japs any longer. That's not really proper. I don't know, you know. And it wasn't like somebody that was 75 years old. It was somebody younger than me. And I'm like, that's not really cool, man.
Hello, ethnic slur. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's get to some listener email. I have one email that I wanted to read
one?
In particular.
That's it? Oh,
we're running a little long. We've got some voicemails, but this was an awesome email, and if you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so by contacting us at info@aroundcomics.com. Please put listener feedback in the subject line, and this email comes from Raj. It says, "Hi there, guys. My name is Raj. I'm from Hong Kong, but have been living and working in mainland China for the
past 3 years."
Oh, of course,
right after
years.
My whole Jap thing. You get a guy from China.
Nice
thanks.
Segue.
Yeah.
I've always had perfect timing, you know?
Speaking of Rick Remender.
The lost episode
no one will ever hear again. It's our disclaimer at the end. We call that the Remender disclaimer.
Nice.
I have always described myself as a comic fan who never reads comics, in that for the DC and Marvel universes, I kept up with the superheroes through other mediums such as cartoons and the movies, as well as Wikipedia. Okay. I've always.
You can't get comics in China?
I have a feeling it's probably kind of hard. And he addresses this a little bit later. I've always been intrigued when my friends would describe the current story arcs in the big two comics today, but also very confused on the depth of these stories that I don't know when and where to jump in. It's like, Yeah, you don't have to be in China to feel that way.
Amen.
I also needed to add some new podcasts to listen to in the morning and evening commute to work, and I thought that a comic space podcast would be a great place to catch up on. I started listening to your show from the earliest episode available, on iTunes, and have made my way all the way to episode 80. So he'll catch up to this voicemail in about 2 years. He's listened to 80 episodes in a month. I know it'll be a while to catch up, but I'm enjoying a lot of your topics that are not just about what is happening in the stories of comics. I especially am enjoying your episodes on what makes a good comic book store. Man, that was a long time ago. Being in mainland China,
he's got a lot of stuff in front of him.
Well, and he'll understand this later. He's doing a Scotty Young.
Yes, he is doing a Scotty Young. Yeah. Listen to all.
Being in mainland China, there isn't a good source of comics, and it's really a pain in the arse to order comics. He actually wrote arse. I wasn't trying to be cute. However, I have recently ordered my first two comic book trades in Hong Kong and will pick them up when I visit next weekend. Going by your views and the positive reviews online, I've gotten the first two trades of DMZ, and nice. I'm sure I won't be disappointed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's just blows my mind that a dude living in China is going to read DMZ.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fucking
from
cool.
An episode that we probably recorded 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. First, I wanted to say that you guys are doing a great job. Well, great start. And hope to email you soon when I'm fully caught up. Secondly, I was hoping you could recommend any podcasts that give a brief overview of the content and stories of recently released comics to help me catch up with the actual stories and arcs in the comics. Thanks again very much for the show. Raj.
Does anybody do a recap?
I know a show.
Yes.
My show.
Do you do recaps of recent
Well, not
stories?
Really recaps, but like, you know.
Okay, Raj, it sounds like the best way for you to catch up on comics or read comics is going to be to buy trades.
But he's not going to get this episode for 3 years.
Really. I know.
Yeah.
So, but we've mentioned you many times. So listen to Chris Marshall's Collected Comics Library, and it will let you know what collected editions are coming out. As far as recaps,
right.
I don't know
of anyone that does like a recap.
Not like true recaps, but I don't think that's
kind of an interesting idea for a comic book podcast, though. If you did like a weekly but that would be.
It's a lot of shit. Yeah. I mean, we spend an hour on Blackest Night. Right. I think iFanboy does probably the best job of a weekly review show on a variety of comics. Yeah. So if you want just a nice cross-section of what's coming out, those guys probably between them read 20 to 25 issues a week and go over their favorite ones. So the folks at iFanboy, Ron and Josh and Connor, do a nice review show. I don't know if there's anyone that does any more of a comprehensive what has come out in the past week show.
I can't think of anybody that does that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comics out there, but I'd say iFanboy for kind of a weekly what's going on. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine within 2 or 3 weeks that Derek Carward will have a podcast like that.
Yes, yes, because Derek will do a podcast on anything, and he likes to do 10, 12 at a time. Mm-hmm. Raj, eventually you'll get up to when Tom starts doing Tom versus the JLA, and so you'll get blow-by-blow recaps of Silver Age JLA issues.
There you go. You could catch up on
really
Flash.
Back, real
it
far
is,
back.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
But yeah, I just thought that was really
awesome. That's pretty
awesome
cool.
That we
now,
got.
Did he mention or did he say, is he... from China? Is he just
well?
There?
He said he's from Hong Kong.
So he's from Hong Kong.
So
no kidding.
Yeah, it's
that's pretty cool.
Awesome. I thought that was. That yeah.
I want to send him comic books now. I want to. Can we FedEx? Possible to FedEx comic books?
They'll probably have to black out some of the bodies and
just send him to Hong Kong. He's obviously got connections in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
send
I think
there.
Hong Kong.
You know somebody
probably,
in Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
You can get anything in Hong
we'll
Kong.
We'll send Carl with him.
Oh, God.
Carl's
the
guy.
True. He goes to China all the time.
Carl's the guy that we work with that goes to China. All right. Well, I tell you what.
He still owes me a gas mask.
He does. Yeah. I wanted to go as Wesley Dodds, and he has access to like Chinese gas masks.
That's why you wanted it. Yeah. That's why.
Yes. That is why, Steve.
Halloween costume.
But that's just like a guy living in communist China.
Yeah,
reading DMZ. That's pretty.
That's awesome.
That is pretty
actually.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
That is
good on you, Brian.
I bet Brian. Yeah, I hope Brian Wood hears this somehow because that's That is pretty awesome to think that he's going to read that.
That is awesome. Yeah. So, all right. We also have some voicemails, and if you'd like to give us a shout, which a lot of people have been, you can call us.
Just scream at us. Just find us and scream at us.
1-888-977-5903. All right, and here's a voicemail. It's an oldie but a goodie. The guy who was the only voicemailer for a long time because I was giving out the wrong phone number. So apparently he's the only one that went to the website to find that the correct number. This is Fester.
Hey, what's up, Around Comics? It's Fester from Lansing, Michigan. What's shaking you examples of gorgeous man meat? Talking to you, Chris. Anyway, okay, question about Black Knight. Sue Dibney was pregnant when she was murdered, yes?
No.
Does that mean she's going to give birth to a zombie green, Black Lantern baby? And if so, will that... I don't know where I'm going with that. I just remembered just now that she was pregnant when she was murdered by
was
Dean Waring.
Are you sure about that, Fester?
And now she's a zombie.
I think you might be pulling that out of your ass. I don't know. So, does anyone know?
Let me field this for you. I actually know the answer to this one. Yeah. I have my friend works at the pharmacy that she got her test from. And it was actually a false positive. The test was recalled. If anybody bought, an EPT in the past 6 months.
From these dates, this date to this date.
It's wrong. You're really not pregnant. So she wasn't.
What a shame.
It was a false positive.
So there you go,
Fester. The mental image of a zombie giving birth to a zombie is just...
Didn't you ever see the remake of Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah.
Hey.
Could happen. I don't honestly remember if she was... Was she pregnant during Identity Crisis?
I think that was revealed that she had... She was pregnant. I vaguely remember that. So,
yeah, that sounds maybe right.
We shall see. Okay. Well, here is
who knows? Johns will figure it out.
Now, I don't know if we'll play this whole one. This is from Ted in Indiana, who's left us about 15 voicemails. And Ted had a tendency of yelling into the mic. So, this is Ted
whispering,
trying to.
Hi, this is Ted from Indiana. Hey, I just had a revelation.
He doesn't really sound like
that. I believe. Without a shadow of a doubt, that Captain America is the Marvel's Tupac. Okay, hear me out. Okay. Tupac died
What about Biggie?
1996, okay? And then Captain America died in 2006, okay?
Gotcha. Hold on. I'm with you.
Then, okay, Tupac was shot
Bring it home.
In Las Vegas at a Tyson fight. And then Captain America, okay, was shot on a courthouse, the same courthouse, that Tyson had his trial at. Okay, put that together.
Okay.
And then
you're a fucking genius.
And came back out with a bunch of CDs. Captain America died and came out with a lot more comic books. I mean, I don't know about you. I think, a duck is a duck. You know what I'm saying? Okay? I believe
a duck is
that
a duck.
Tupac and Captain America, they have a connection somewhere or Stanley, or somewhere in Marvel, believes that Captain America could be their Tupac.
Bug life.
I think that's a good connection there.
I'm sure that Stanley is totally dialed into Tupac.
It's on Wikipedia. Hold on a second. Hey, Martha, can you take off my Green Lantern t-shirt, please? I told you not to wear that, okay? Thank you very much. You don't even know who Green Lantern is, okay? You're going to jinx the writers. And they're going to mess around and make Green Lantern black, okay? Please take that shirt off, okay?
Racist.
Excuse me, I apologize. Talking about Green... I got Green Lantern on my mind.
Jesus Animal Christ. Man, can anyone just leave us a serious fucking voicemail?
Okay.
Everybody wants to be funny.
And my question is, what if Aquaman had come into the scene and Animal Man was like, hey, I'm utilizing this Green Lantern whale, and then Aquaman's like, no, he's a sea creature.
The
that's
fuck does that have Captain America or Tupac?
Who would have jurisdiction over the Green Lantern whale? Would it be Animal Man?
Well, he wasn't
Aquaman. Okay.
He wasn't a Earth whale.
Thank you very much. I guess that's all I got. Yeah.
I don't know if Aquaman has control over sea creatures from. Alien planet.
Star Trek IV.
I just don't
whale.
Know.
Yeah,
anymore.
Is that what it was?
Hey, Chris and Sal, I never want to be on the show ever again.
Do you take callers?
No.
That's exactly why.
And this is why. Yeah. Remember how we were talking earlier about thinking too much?
Yeah. Yes. We have some other voicemails, but we'll revisit those here in a couple weeks.
We'll listen to those later and just make fun of you behind your back.
Yeah, Roger from Canada has one in the queue there.
Roger
so,
from Canada.
Yeah, it's Roger Cousineau. I don't know, he's French Canadian, and he told Tom, fuck you. Because of that.
Well, that's a good policy, pretty much.
All right. Well, thanks for all the listener feedback and email and voicemail.
For all your cards and letters.
We, as always, are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support, and essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. So there you go. Help those veteran creators. Speaking of veteran creators, great to see Gene Colan do Captain America 601.
Yes.
Which was awesome.
And Brubaker writing in some vampires and werewolves for him to draw, which was pretty cool.
Speaking of Hero, we have Wizard World Chicago coming up here in just a couple weeks, and I know that George Perez is a guest of special guest at Wizard, but I believe he's going to be set up at the Hero booth quite a bit.
Sweet.
So for anyone going to Wizard Chicago this year, whenever you get into the convention center, I would make a beeline to the Hero Initiative table. I also believe that Frank, get in line.
Right behind Chris.
Yep. I'll be behind the table.
Oh, that's right. You'll be working.
I want to volunteer for that again, too.
Frank Cho is going to be there, and I believe that he helps Hero out quite a bit, so I believe he's going to be doing
some
sketches there.
Draw a couple asses for you.
And this is kind of the interesting thing. On Friday night, I believe, there's going to be the Hero Initiative Speed Dating.
What?
20 eligible men and 20 eligible bachelorettes.
Yeah, let's see them find 20.
We'll be speed dating, and I think that you can find details on that.
Now I gotta go.
At heroinitiative.org.
At least for that show.
Yeah.
It's, they've got some fun stuff. I actually talked to Jim McLaughlin the other day. He's looking forward to it, so we're going to be able to hang out with Jim a little bit. He is the grand poobah at Hero Initiative. Jim's a great guy, and they've got some fun stuff planned. And we, of course, will be doing some Hero Initiative stuff at the Windy City Con, which remember to make your plans now to attend the 2009 Windy City Comic Con.
Speaking of Jim McLaughlin, I did honor a promise to Jim
A Vegas promise?
Yeah. He had made me, all of us, we were sitting at...
You killed a hooker.
No. Was it Wizard World?
Yeah, Wizard last year.
Was it last year? Michael Turner
passed away.
And Jim had made it. We were all sitting around a table getting drunk because of the news. And
which Jim and Mike Turner were very close friends.
And I guess there was a sort of pact, or not a pact, just a thing that they had always done with Mike's dad, I guess. And so I honored that Jim, agreement while I was in Vegas. So.
And it wasn't killing a hooker.
No, I don't know. I don't know if they want to. It wasn't that big a deal. No, okay. But it was. Okay.
Dead hookers were not involved.
No, okay. There was no dying. There was some brain cells dying. Okay.
I know that Jim would appreciate that, and he and Mike were very, very close friends. Yeah. So that's we're coming up on the 1 year of that. So once again, the Windy City Comic Con Saturday, September 19th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're adding over 30 new creators from last year, so it's going to be a creator list of right around 80, which is a lot, and about 20 exhibitors, new retailers for Silver Age back issues. We've got Cadence Comic Art is going to have original art. Tons of our creators actually use Cadence as their art dealer, so you'll be able to buy some original pages and have those creators sign those pages right there. Folks like Scotty and Mike and Chris Burnham and Jenny Frizen and Greg Titus and Tim Seeley and I think Kevin Mellon, and it's just, the list goes on and on. Andy Kuhn.
Bunch
bunch of folks. So you can buy your tickets for the show ahead of time right now. And remember that we'll be giving away 500 gift bags.
Close to being sold out.
Is it? Nice.
No,
nice.
I just thought it's
go to WindyCityComicCon.com. Tickets only $10 this year, and it's like I said, 80 creators, tons of exhibitors. It's going to be a great time. So,
and please wear a costume if you come.
Yeah, yeah.
Please. Oh, you know, I did make a I didn't make it online. I made a promise to people that if they come in a costume, that I would give them something if they came and found me at the con. So. I will.
This commemorative Windy City Comic Con postcard is.
I didn't say what it was. I just said I'd give them something. Maybe a button. Might be a Windy City Comic Con.
You know, it's
button.
Sneaking up on us. It's going to be here before we know it.
Holy
about 8 weeks.
Shit.
About 8 weeks or so. All right.
I'm done.
Remember,
that's it.
And that's it.
Close, I retire.
Closing the door on it. Remember to check out Tom versus the Flash, 11 o'clock comics, The League of Nobodies when it comes out. You can also listen to Chris Marshall on the Collective Comics Library. Lock and Key. The Lock and Key episode.
Lock and Key. We got to do Lock and Key. Yeah, that's where we've had some timing issues on the show. And,
well, you've got a Brit.
Well...
And a Southerner.
Yeah.
And Scotty.
And Scotty. And me.
You guys are never coming out with another episode.
We might not. It could be over already. I don't know.
It's over before it began. Chris Marshall, the Collected Comics Library, weekly, correct?
Weekly. And shortly after Comic-Con, I will be having, well, I'm scheduled to have an interview with Terry Moore.
Oh, awesome.
To talk about the big old Strangers in Paradise omnibus.
I was actually in the same room with Terry Moore earlier this week. Didn't even know it.
Really?
Yeah.
You should give up your geek card.
I should give up my geek card because I could have talked to Terry Moore and didn't. I did talk to Jim Valentino.
I would
very, very nice guy.
I wouldn't know what he looked like either.
Yeah, and Craig Thompson was there.
Oh, very
so
cool.
It was the American Library Association deal. So
right,
it's
brother.
Steve, Comic Book Queers, coming out sporadically.
Whenever the fuck we want to put it out.
That's
and
right.
Guess what? You're grateful for it.
Absolutely, and that's how it should be. So check out the Comic Book Queers. We love our fellow Chicagoan podcasters and even the guys from Detroit.
Yeah, we're okay.
The upper Midwest
we
mafia.
Need our help. We need help.
The upper Midwest.
Detroit needs help.
Detroit needs a lot of help, absolutely.
We gave you Ben Gordon.
That's true.
Oh, no, you took Ben Gordon from us. Thank you. Enjoy that.
Hope you don't want anybody
would
else
you,
to
would
shoot
you,
the ball.
Here, take these smallpox-infested blankets while you're at it. They can't hit from three-point with the game on the line either.
Oh.
you're taking our hockey players, though. I don't like it.
That's right. We got Mariposa. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
that
we'll trade you Ben Gordon for the...
I got to get out of this sausage fest. You guys.
All right.
I'm done.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Stevie D, Mr. Chris Marshall, Brian Salazar. Come back next week because it's going to be our comic book podcast companion episode. That's going to be next week. I'm going to release this one because Blackest Night's a little better time sensitivity.
Okay. Gotcha.
That episode will have Eric Houston, Steve, Sal, Chris, myself, John Suntress, Mike Norton, Ron Richards. Is that everybody? Sounds about right.
So
a big old comic podcast. Hippity hoo.
Me? Did you mention me?
Yes, I mentioned you. Of course,
you can mention
me
twice.
Hippity hoo. You mean hullabaloo?
Hullabaloo.
There you go.
That's all right. And Tom will be back in a few weeks. He's
maybe
in Detroit. Yeah, maybe. We hope.
I hope.
Come back to us,
I hope
Tom.
He locks his doors.
Tom. Yeah, I ran into Tom on Wednesday. And he's like, yeah, I'm taking like a hiatus from the show. It'll be like a month since he's been on. So
odd time. He's earned it.
Good for
he has earned. He has earned it. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with that comic book podcast episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and
around comics.
I just found me a bottle of blues. Some strange company called it all the soothe. Ain't it hot? Ain't it hot?
Smack myself in the
temple. Want somebody?
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.
In a bubble of fake energy, put a nickel in a graveyard machine. I get higher and lower.
like black balloons all banged and blown on a backwards river. The infidels shiver in the stench of belief. And tell my mom I'm 100 years late. I'm over the rails and out of the race. And the crippled psalms of an age that won't